You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank podcast. I'm here with Lance Stanford. Now, are you named after the college?
No, yes. Somewhere way down the line, I am related. Like we've traced it back, but that's not enough to get you admitted to the college, apparently.
Do you get reparations like $50 or something?
I wish. Nope, I just get a too bad, so sad.
Oh, that sucks. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself and what do you do professionally, Lance?
I am, I guess, officially my job is I'm a conductor for the railroad. I sit on trains and things.
But are we talking about B&O Railroad or are we talking about the real railroad?
BNSF Railroad.
So you deal with trains basically all day?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Does that get fun? I mean, I remember being a kid. I'm pretty sure every kid out there who is now an adult can relate to this. Being in a car, seeing a train, or seeing a giant 18-wheeler and just looking at the person and ramming their hand like in a hand-pumping motion for them to honk the horn or hit that whistle.
See that all the time. It's okay. It's on the train itself, there's two people. There's a conductor and an engineer. I'm the conductor. I'm the guy who, the engineer is the one who is technically controlling the train, but a lot of people don't realize trains only go forwards or backwards. There's not a whole lot to that part of it. And I'm the one, I'm kind of like the navigator, you know, like, hey, we need to slow down here. Hey, watch out for this coming up here. Hey, we need to make sure that we do this and things. And it's actually incredibly boring because you just sit there and have to stare at all these different papers. We have a ton of paperwork, more than you should. And I've been out there for about a year and a half now, and it's okay. But before that, I started my own podcasting network, and I do that on the side. I'm also a writer on the side. So just kind of dabble in a little bit of everything, really.
You probably have a lot of time to write when you're just kind of sitting on a train. I mean, yeah, you have to give them directions on where to go, what station to stop at. Kind of, I'm guessing you also have to estimate what time and arrival dates. Like, you have to make sure you're leaving at a certain point, knowing, like, you know, just the basics. I mean, I know it's a track and you're just going literally one way sometimes, but there's a lot that kind of goes into it. But you, like you said, it's just like the movie you saw with Denzel Washington. You're sitting there. You're the guy that Captain Kirk, basically, of the train.
Yeah. And you got to deal with like talking to the people at your Home Depot. I mean, not to say Home Depot, but the people at your home terminal. And then also the people, they have like regional terminals. So I'm based out of Texas. And our terminal is in Lubbock, Texas. But we go from here to Amarillo. We also go to Sweetwater and we go to Clovis, New Mexico. Which all in a car, those are all about a 2-hour drive. On a train, they could take up to 12 hours. It's a little ridiculous. And then in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's where our big hub is. And so, whereas the guys in Lubbock, they kind of oversee what goes on, you know, from Lubbock to out of our station. The people up there, they look at the whole map. And so they're the ones that are like, okay, we have this. Because they rank trains just like everything else, you know, they prioritize it all. So yeah. They'll look and say, hey, this is an Amazon train coming through.
There's a legit bunch of people, and it was on a podcast called Your Mom's House Podcast by Tom Segura and his wife, Christina P. And they literally had these things, they call them dad boners, which is like when someone sees a double rainbow, it's a double rainbow. But it was a guy, and he was looking and finding these awesome trains, and the joy he was getting from it was like, every person wants to have that one thing they're super passionate about. I mean, this guy was like, it's a monorail. This is a mirror. And he's just screaming. You're like, dude, it's a train. But in his eyes, he's like, this is like a once in, it's like meeting Morgan Freeman in a grocery store.
There's a lot of people out there like that. I mean, almost every day, whenever we go somewhere, there's people parked beside the tracks, which is super dangerous, by the way. They're just parked there and have like professional camera setups taking pictures of the trains as they go by, or they have their kids out there because they want to get a picture of their kids in front of the train. And they, you see
that Stand By Me thing, man.
Yeah. Then saw how that worked out.
Like, do you think it's like, because there's, all right, I'm going to throw this at you. It's going to be a whole thing out of left field. Okay.
Okay. So
there's a cryptid. Are you familiar with cryptids?
Yes.
Okay. So it's like a spinoff of the New Jersey Devil, but it's in Pennsylvania. It's called the Pope Licking Monster. And it's the only cryptid with a body count.
I'm not familiar with that one.
The reason why is it's not the actual thing that kills you. Its location is on a straight up 2 mile bridge, and there's train tracks. So people go on this bridge to go and find this monster, and a train comes and they have nowhere to go.
Yeah, the train's going to win every single time.
Yeah, the only person that survived in one of these incidents was talking about his girlfriend was killed, and he was barely hanging on, like, off the ledge, basically, and he got his arm, like, ripped off. Like, it was, like, some, like, crazy story. I was like, holy crap. Like, I don't think people realize how dangerous trains actually are. That's why whenever I see a train, like a railroad crossing or something, I'm really hoping it's not that scene from Hancock where the thing comes down in front of my car and behind my car. Like, I'm pretty sure we've all seen Final Destination. You'd be
surprised how many people drive across those.
Dude, they just sit there and stop too. It's like they'll sit there like in traffic. I'm like, I would wait till there was enough space for my car to be able to move past it before I even rolled up.
Yeah, I see people all the time. You know, those gates will be down and they'll just drive around them. And there's a lot of other stuff that goes into that, but I can never think of any time that it's been a big enough hurry that I'm willing to die for.
Do you ever think it's weird that people are like, I couldn't hear it coming. Like, I never even heard it coming. It was like, how could you not hear that giant machine trucking along?
Well, and anytime we come to a crossing where there's a road crossing, we have to, like, legally, federally mandated, sit there and blow the whistle like 4 times and long, you know, hold it. Like, it's technically, it's almost like Morse code. It's two shorts, a long and a short, but the shorts are still long, you know, you're going to hear them.
So I got a really good story. Basically, there was this railroad crossing about probably like 2 years. I was probably like 2 years into having my license, around like 19 years old. And I was driving back from my buddy's house in Bishopville. It was daytime, but it was rainy out. There's a railroad crossing sign that was broken and I had no clue about it. So I'm driving and all I see is I go over these tracks. Like, it's like right next to a graveyard. So there's a giant brick wall built up so people can't climb over it. So I can't see over around the corner. So I can't tell if a train is coming. And then there's another building in the way. So I'm like, I can't see either on either left or right. So basically to see if a train is coming, you have to kind of drive out and look left and right, and then you're clear to go.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just driving. I'm like, all right, the railroad thing's not telling me to stop, so we can just go right through this. Don't have to slow down or anything. So I'm going like 35, and all I see as I'm going over the tracks and I turn to my left, there's a fucking train, dude. I swear to you. I mean, 100 yards away maybe, but like it scared the shit out of me because—
Yeah,
it,
that's a scary feeling.
100 yards might be like, oh, this is a length of a football field. You had plenty of time. I'm like, no, you fucking don't. When you're moving as a car and there's a train coming at you, it's moving as well. It's literally the math equation. Like, your life basically ended up like a math equation. I think that's the only time I could have ever used that. When train A is heading to station B at, you know, 45 miles per hour, drove over the train track and I was like, fuck, like there's a train right. And I mean, as soon as I got over it, I parked my car like off to like this, like a little bit farther just to get away. And I sat there for a minute, was thinking like, holy shit. And I ended up calling up like the police and everything, letting them know, like, there's this lights on this track that are out. and they ended up getting it fixed. But I was like, damn, dude, that would have, I would have been hit by a fucking train.
Yeah, because those things, I mean, they weigh hundreds of tons. So even if somebody sees you and they hit the brakes right then and there, it's going to take them half a mile or better to stop.
Now, have you ever hit anything while you were inside the train, like that just the driver was just like, oh, we're fucking going through it, either because it was like a deer, like it would move? Because I've seen videos on Facebook of like a deer on some train tracks and this train comes out of like a bank, like a hard corner.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking doesn't even see it coming, just bam, and explodes, man. It's like it looks like it explodes before it even hits the train.
All I've hit, like I said, I've only been out there about a year and a half. Unfortunately, we hit a couple of little puppies one time. They were in the track and we were honking at them, you know, trying to get them to move, and they didn't move. Oh, and geez. I didn't turn back to look because they were little puppies. I didn't want to see.
I've hit the occasional squirrel, man. I'll admit to it. Like I've hit a cat before too in my car. I remember because literally I was driving. It was in the grass. It fucking ran literally out into the street. Into my right tire, like head right into the tire. I was like, there was nothing I could fucking do. Like he was off to the side. He just decided to get up and go. It's like, do you still think about that? Like there was nothing you could have done. You could not have slowed down.
Oh yeah. And I mean, as heartless as this sounds, like with animals, you don't, you know, I'm an animal person. I have multiple dogs and everything, but at the end of the day, you don't risk derailing that train because, one, if you derail it, you get in trouble. You got to, like, you know, you could have to take a leave of absence, all this stuff. If it's a bad enough derail, you know, the car could come off and hit like a pedestrian car or a person. So you kind of have to, it stinks, but I mean, animals are kind of expendable in that. You know, with people, yeah, you try everything you do you can to stop and save them. But with an animal, you know, you honk your horn, but you're, like I said, you're going so fast and you're so heavy. Even if you're going 5-10 miles an hour.
You're not
going
to slow down in time anyway.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, all the train cars behind you, you have to take an account for all those. Because if you saw the movie Hancock, that giant train that was going, and he just slams right into it, and the whole thing looks like it just hit a wall and didn't go through it, just like flip back. All the carts behind it started flipping off the track and crashing into like cars and stuff. It's like he did more damage than like saving that person's life. He could have easily just lifted the car up out of the thing. I'm like, there's so much that we don't even like take into consideration. I heard that riding a train is actually really, really nice.
Yeah. So we also work in the yard where we build trains and do things like that. And with that, you have to, sometimes you have to ride on the side of the cars, and I'm not gonna lie, it's kind of scary because if it's nighttime, because it's 24/7 and you're always doing stuff. For a while, I was on a job that worked from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. and it was horrible. But you're out there and you're hanging on the side of this car. You have a little lantern, but you know, at 3 a.m, it doesn't matter. You can't see anything. And you're going through and you just hope, you know, you have a radio and you're talking to the guy, the engineer up in the cab, and you're hoping, okay, I hope he hears me. I hope. And that's the thing though, if they don't hear you, you have to give them updates every few seconds. Otherwise they have to stop. But still, you know, in the back of your mind, you're always like, okay. Or if somebody who worked before you, if they didn't clear a track and there's something hanging over, if you hit it, you're going to get torn in half. You know, we've been pretty lucky here where I'm at that we haven't had anybody die in like 20 years. But I know just a couple of months ago, there were like two guys died in Dallas because of, you know, you just not paying attention or whatever. And like I said, there was something hanging off. There was a car that wasn't in its clearance point, and they thought it was, and when they went by it, it just ripped them in two. So
do you find that you get a lot of homeless people that just kind of hitch a ride on the trains at all?
You know, we don't hear. You talk to some of the guys who have been doing it for 30, 40 years. And they said used to, that was a big thing, but now it's really not. The only homeless people we've dealt with is, you know, usually your train station is in a rougher part of town, an older part of town, that sometimes we'll get homeless people out there, like just walking across or sleeping under a bridge. And, you know, we just have to shoo them away. They technically you grab like a cops and get them for trespassing, but you know,
grab like a do you grab a broom and just go out there? Hey, no, this is not one. It's like every runaway from home movie. They got a bindle sack, you know, they got the stick with the wrapped up in a bandana, like all their precious items, and they just like got like one shoe on, and they have like a rusty can for a hat, and they're just hopping a ride somewhere trying to get from point A to point B.
Well, nowadays, since 9/11, the railroad is actually part of or deals with Homeland Security. So all the cars, if there's anything in them, they're locked and they can't be unlocked until they get to their destination.
That seems like a better way to sneak drugs into a country is with a train rather than using an airplane.
Right. And we have some trains from Mexico, and I've actually thought like, I wonder if there's a bunch of cocaine on that. I wonder if that's how they got it in here.
What do you got back there?
Yeah.
We got a lot of sand. We got a lot of like imported goods. I'm like, what's in the imported goods, huh? What you got in there? Oh, they're just sugar cane. Okay, let me look at this. Like freaking bags and bags of coke. I'm like, is Scarface in the back seat? Is he riding on this train? Is this
right. I've seen enough movies. I know how this works. But it's fun. Like I said, it was kind of a necessity thing because the podcast, I mean, you're a podcaster, you know, it doesn't always pay the bills and things. And I have a family, so I needed insurance. So that's why I got a job out at the railroad, is to kind of supplement.
Yeah, I know. I like asking about people's jobs, and I'm like, we all have a day job, okay? It's not like we enjoy it. It's not like we wanted to do that, but that's also what leads us and leads me into like me asking you like your podcast as well. Like that probably gives you a lot of time. You know, you said you're sitting there just a lot of sitting. There's not a whole lot of doing anything. So you probably have good ideas in your head you write down. I mean, you talked about, you know, being a writer as well. Like that helps with that. You know, that gives you more time for that. You know, for me, I work at a hotel. So I have my busy moments and then my not busy moments where you're sitting around doing nothing. Like if we have nobody at the hotel, like maybe like 30 people out of like a capacity of like, I don't know, 800 or something. You're just sitting there and they're all older people that just put do not disturbs on. So I have plenty of time to craft out like ideas, write stuff down. You know, I'm pretty sure that probably gives you good ideas for your podcast as well.
Oh yeah. So, you know, they've proven scientifically that you are more creative when you're doing stuff. You know, if you're engaging part of your brain in one thing, it helps feed other parts of it. So it does work really well. Especially my podcast is a daily podcast. I do it Monday through Friday.
Same here. Week. Same. Well, mine's, I work weekends too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I used to do 6 days a week and I was like, because I produce a couple of other shows and I actually had another whole podcast series we were doing that was twice a week. And so it all worked out, but it just, I do a theme every week. And then every day I have the same category. So every Monday I talk video games, every Tuesday I talk TV and movies, Wednesdays comics, Thursdays history, and Fridays I take fan questions. And it just varies. Like this week, as of this recording, I did. It was all about Jay and Silent Bob because Jay and Silent Bob reboot came out. Last week, it was the Addams Family because the Addams Family came out. Week before that was the Joker. Sometimes when there's not a movie I care about seeing, it'll be a random person in history. You know, it'll be their birthday or a celebrity's birthday or a holiday. And I'm actually in December, first weekend of December, I had 1,000 shows. So you get to a point where, yeah, you have to kind of reach out for ideas. And when I'm working, you know, it helps. It's like, oh, this would be a good idea, because covering that much content in so many diverse ways. And a lot of times I'll come up with a good idea and then I'll get to the video game. I'm like, man, that there's no video games about that, or there's no comic books about that. And so I have to go back to the well and figure something out. But
well, that's like the beauty of not just podcasting, but like, you know, not having anything really super structured, because you have free kind of momentum and kind of movement and where you want to go. You know, a lot of people monetize their podcast to having like one specific topic. I'm going to do Civil War criminals of 1864. And you're like, just 1864? They're like, just 1864. And you're like, oh, that's going to limit you so much. They only maybe have like 20 people. Like, they can't go super far out. You know, it's the same thing with TV show podcasts or a series or something. You have that series to talk about, and you can always kind of ramble off of it, but it's like that series is going to end. Then you don't, you're just going to keep redoing old stuff. You know what I mean? It's hot for that moment. And that's where you see a lot of them kind of branch off, or they're just talking about what the actors are doing now. It's because their topic, their start, their idea was already so limited. When you leave it open, like for me, mine's like, let's just come in, sit, and talk one-on-one conversation. Sometimes I do them with multiple people, but it's like, I want to get to know the person. I'm trying to, like, if you just randomly were walking around on the street, like, we all live here together, take an hour to get to know one another.
Right. And that, yeah, I agree. Cause one of those side projects I mentioned, we went through the old Batman, the animated series from the 90s, and we did commentary for every single episode, all 100 and whatever. But we knew going in, you know, it was going to be a finite project. Like, we were only going to do it for those episodes, and then we're going to be done. We could have moved it on. We did a little bit of the Superman animated, and we had plans to do Static Shock and...
Oh, my God. Do Static Shock, League. Please. Oh, who forgets the guy that flies on a fucking sewer grate? Like, people.
Yeah. But it just got to be, you know, it was one of those, we did the Batman and we had a lot of fun with Batman. But as we started doing Superman, we're like, man, it's just not there. You know, it's not the same
kind of like inspiration that started you in the first place.
Yeah.
It's like a superhero that picks his super suit, you know, in the beginning, makes it like, Tobey Maguire, you know, Spider-Man. Okay. When he created that super suit out of just like a bunch of janky clothing, you know what I mean? Then he got the official super suit. It was nice, but that old suit, the original, still had that original feel to it. You know what I mean? It's the one, like, if you wear, you know, if I was going to have a super suit, even if it was a really shitty design, then I end up getting it Elon Musk out, like, later on. You know what I mean? I would still be like, damn. But even though I talk shit on that original costume, it's still the original and has actually more meaning than the one I have now.
Oh, yeah. There's that nostalgia with it. And it's always going to hold that special place in your heart. And I think using the comic book allegory there is great, because that's why in comics so many times, and even in the movies, in the video games based on them, you know, you can unlock that original suit, or you'll see the original suit in the background hanging up somewhere in the movies. And you're just like, oh, man, that's the first one.
That's your legacy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, dude, I'm telling you, it's... There's something, like, I love the creative aspects of all people. And I want to, like, talk a little bit about, like, your podcast. So it's called, now, it's The Late Night Nerd.
No, just The Night Nerd.
The Night Nerd. You should do late. Oh, you don't do it late, I guess, because you have, like, maybe it's too late. It's a little bit scary out, I guess.
No, yeah, I'm a night person, and it's a catchy title. Really?
Yeah.
I was really surprised it was available, but... You know, the Night Nerd, because our whole thing is, we're just kind of laid back, almost like a, and when I have guests on, it's a very kind of lounge feel, like, hey, we're just going to hang out and talk. And I host a lot of events here regionally and stuff, and usually they're late nights at a bar and everything. So that's kind
of... Now, what type of events? Because you just gave me a description of like a porn scenario, late night at a bar. So you gotta kind of like be a little bit more detailed in that one.
Well, so a lot of different things. There's trivia around here that I host from time to time at bars. Our local comic shop they had a big 40th anniversary bash not too long ago, and I emceed all that. Our big comic convention here, Lubicon, I am in charge of all the after parties and all the after hours events. So like Sunday, I'm going to meet with a bar to have an after party there. And it's just anything late at night. I mean, poker games. I used to host a lot of late night poker games, just whatever needs. I mean, I guess poker, you don't need an MC, but you still have to talk to people and things.
You need John. You need what is his name? Kenny Rogers, you know, singing.
Right.
You got to know when to hold them.
Know when to fold them. But that's really what I do. And, you know, even at conventions, not my hometown conventions, like the Dallas conventions, Austin, stuff like that, we usually do an after con meetup. So after the Saturday, all day at the con, it's like, hey, we're at this bar. This bar is hosting our event. Come on down and hang out with us. And people come and hang out, talk about the con, talk about the show. Just, I've found that when you're in that kind of setting, you know, just the lounge bar type, not club, with the loud music and stuff, but when you're just kind of hanging out with friends or people who aren't friends yet, that you're just a little more relaxed. And so that's, like I said, between that and being nocturnal, just the night nerd just kind of happened.
Well, it's just like if you write, you know, you said you did some writing. Do you write like stories? Do you do?
I do comics, and actually I have a kid's book coming out next month.
Okay. So listen to this. If you're writing a comic book, you know the hardest environment to write a comic book would be in?
Silence.
Exactly. It's different for every person, but the hardest thing would be being around like something that does not have that environment, that acoustics, you know, that feeling that you get, you know, it's like when you go to a movie theater and you see a movie on the actual theater, it has the ambiance to it. You know, if I write, like I'll write a little bit, like maybe some poetry or something, you know, cause it'll be like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm drinking some coffee and I'm like, whoa, I have my window open and I'm hearing rain. Here comes amazing thoughts. And then I start writing it down, and they're not amazing, but they're just like words that I start crafting out. And I find if I put myself in a mood like that, like for you being surrounded by, you know, if you go to a comic con or something, that environment, it's all kind of boosting towards that effect or that feeling that you can get, like to inspire you to write something from a comic book.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's why a lot of my writing, I'll go to the bar. And I'll go by myself, but I'll know everybody that works there, you know, the bartenders, the servers and everybody. And I'll just kind of set up shop in the corner with my laptop. And I'd like to, you know, a lot of people like to people watch. I like to kind of, this sounds creepy, but like eavesdrop on conversations. You know, somebody's great ideas to me. From
it. I think everybody eavesdrops, though. Like, how many times do you have your headphones in at work or something just so someone won't talk to you, but they're not even plugged into anything?
Right. And like you said, everybody does that. And you hear people say things, and it may be something, the most random thing, off the wall thing, but that could lead to this idea, which will lead to that idea, which is, oh, now actually, because this one person that was at the bar talked about, you know, today while they were at their job, they ran into a lady who had a conniption over some inane thing. You're like, well, but what if, you know, she threw a fit about that because of this? And then it gets the ball rolling. And that's not to say, you know, I steal ideas, but I'm inspired by other people.
That's with comedians, though. Comedians are like that too. You know, they bring their laptop bring their just phone to write something on, but really they just go out and they experience people, you know, someone talking, you know, you see the person in Starbucks, you know, typing on their laptop or something, whether they know if they're actually creating something or not, or they're just sipping their coffee like some pretentious asshole. You know, it's you get work done and people do eavesdrop. That's a thing. Okay. It's not like if you say you don't do it, you're just lying. Okay. Yeah. It's funny because there'll be the person in the back, like, I don't do that. And it's like, are you eavesdropping into my conversation that I'm having with Lance right now? And they're like, no, I'm not. Yeah, like, okay, all right, he's still fucking listening. You know what I mean? Well, like, it's that.
Yeah, and then on the flip side, you know, even if you're writing about mutants or monsters or aliens or whatever, if the dialogue in there is natural, you know, if it is something you hear somebody say, they can relate to the story more. They're like, man, that I've had that conversation, so I'm interested in this now. And by making it more appealing, because, you know, we've all seen movies, read books, stuff like that, where they're talking on this level of a Harvard professor or something. And it's like, most people don't talk like that. And
it's funny because you probably hear a lot more people talking about comic books now. Like, you know, it's funny, back in the day, like, being a comic book fan, a superhero fan, was like a nerd type thing, which is like kind of probably like the reason why you kind of do the topics you do, called the Night Nerd, like, for your podcast, because there are kind of what would be considered nerdy topics. But you're seeing that happen a lot more in popular, you know, culture now. It's becoming the norm. It's not even a nerd thing to do that. I got into a big topic about nerds and geeks because I was like, aren't they just the same thing? But back in the day, nobody wanted to be a nerd. Nobody, oh, yeah. you got picked on, you know, people just looked at you like, nerd. Like, if you said something super smart, nerd, yeah. It's like, what? Like, you're killing me for knowing something or being smart, you know? Now it's like everybody wants to aspire to that. Like, if you're a nerd, you're an Elon Musk. You're seeing these people come up, you know, with their intelligence, and they're becoming like models now. Back in the day when we had just the education processes of, oh, he's got a six pack and Greek Adonis muscles. That means he's awesome and I should look up to be him. It's like, no, now you're seeing the guy with a good credit score.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, because I'm older. I'm 36. And I remember I grew up small town, middle of nowhere, farming community. But luckily we were so small, you know, there's like 100 and something people in my graduating class that we all knew each other. So it was like, okay, yeah, I was a nerd. This guy was the jock, but we didn't have anybody else to hang out with, so we're going to hang out with each other. And then, you know, once people kind of got to peek behind the curtain and they're like, oh, yeah, I've heard Bill Gates. I'm like, yeah, Bill Gates makes more money in a minute than Michael Jordan makes in a lifetime.
He doesn't need to make money. He doesn't need to. He just keeps doing it. And you ask him why you have so much money. He's like, I donate most of my money to charity. I'm like, oh, so you're just going to leave it for your kids. No, he's not doing that either. He's giving his kids like $5 million to start their own company and get their own wings out when he dies. But he's like, no, you're going to build something and work for it. Because he understands, like, if you give a kid everything, like, if you give, like, all parents obviously want to give their kids everything. You want to have them set on their basis, obviously, that whole argument. But giving them too much to the point where they become selfish and don't want to work for anything themselves and just live off their parents' money. I mean, that
hurts them in the long run.
Yeah. Cause it's like, they don't have any grounding. Next thing you know, they're burned out at like 26 years old and they don't have any money left because they spent through their inheritance, you know, and now they don't have any grounding. They don't have a company built. Like, Bill Gates's idea was like, start a company and work from there. Yeah. Use the money, put it all wherever you have to put it into a company and build it so you can keep a sustainable income. I mean, if you think about it, if I offered you $5 million, like, are you just going to blow it? You know, obviously you're going to buy things you want to buy at that moment, but then eventually you're going to be like, I think I need to start putting this towards something that's going to give me an actual income.
Well, and they've done, I think, like, families that are traditionally wealthy, you know, your Rockefellers, your Walton, stuff like that.
The Jackson Five.
They, yeah.
Dude, I watched a video. Hold on. I watched a video where Michael Jackson walked into a legit vase and like old art, like, I don't know what it was, an art antique store or something. He was like, I want this, I want that. Did we buy those? Did we buy that? I was like, holy shit. They're like, and the guy's just literally going, how much is this, sir? And the guy's like, oh, that's $2.3 million for that painting. He goes, oh, I like that. I want it. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, shit, I wish I had that type of money.
Well, but see, though, I mean, you could argue that he's a self-made. You know, he recorded and performed. But the ones, families who hand down money, they get poorer and poorer as the years go on because, you know, that first, back in the 18-whatevers, the Rockefeller and all those guys, they earned their, I mean, you could get into all the controversy of it all, but they earned their money. And so they did that, you know, they spoiled their kids. And as it got generation after generation, they didn't, one, appreciate the value of a dollar, you know, because they're like, oh, we have plenty of dollars. What does it matter? But then as they started to run out, you know, then two, they run into, we don't know how to make more dollars. So there's this whole big thing about old money is disappears more and more every generation, which there's more and more millionaires, but there's not as many from the old money. They're all people who have started up something or done something on their own. And I think that's kind of cool because that gives you that, at least illusion of, okay, well, if this person can do it, maybe I can too.
Yeah, it's like you see that a little bit. I don't want to throw Tom Hanks' son under the bus, but, you know, he's a rapper and he's creating his own stuff, but he's living off his dad's kind of wealth a little bit too. You know, he's got a little bit for himself, but it's not as much as he's burning off. You know, he's spending more than he's actually making himself. And yeah. It's like you see people like Elon Musk, you know, he quit 3 weeks into college. He just left and started a company with his brother and then sold it for like $50 million or something, like something ridiculous. And then he had an idea, you know, he wanted money. He wanted something to do. He started building stuff. Next thing you know, he's selling just a flamethrower and he labels it, I'm not a flamethrower. Like this is not a flamethrower, is that's what it's called. And the only reason he called it that was it would help him ship it. Because the UPS was like, we're not shipping a flamethrower into our mail right now. He goes, okay, then I'm going to call it, it's not a flamethrower. And they shipped it that way.
Yeah. Well, or you look at like Joe Hill or Jacob Dylan. Joe Hill is Stephen King's son, but he wanted to make it on his own. So he didn't tell anybody he was Stephen King's son until after he had published and everything. And then it was like, yeah, Stephen King's my dad. And
I like that because that's the same thing I could be doing right now in my area. I could be a broadcaster at a radio station that my parents, either one my mom owns or my dad owns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my mom runs it and my dad owns his own. And it's like, I could do that. And they asked me that like when I first had the idea to do a podcast. They're like, why don't I just give you your own radio segment for an hour? We'll set up the people. I'm like, no, because then it's not mine.
Right.
Like if I never told people who my parents were around town, because if I did that, it was my foot in the door. Now I get that whole basis. Why don't you just get a, you know, something for yourself by, you know, build your own self up, but get your foot in the door. I get that, but that was never me.
Yeah.
I would never throw that around and somebody be like, wait a minute, you're his kid? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, why wouldn't you say that? You got the job right away. I've had that happen a couple of times. I'm like, I don't want that. I want you to know me for me. When you're speaking to me, the best thing is that you're speaking to Robbie. You know, everything I'm telling you is everything about me, my character. You know, I'm not good or bad. I'm just Robbie. I'll say some shit that'll be like, why did you say that? I'm like, my brain just went there. Like it was like, it had to come out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel you. I mean, like I said, growing up in a small town, everybody knows everybody. So it was kind of the same way for me. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I know your dad. I was like, well, pretend like you don't.
Yeah. You know, judge me for me. Let me build myself up instead of giving me things. I mean, that's nice, obviously, but that just creates corruption.
Yeah. And the nepotism that comes with it, you know, where it's like, well, because then you always kind of question yourself. You're like, did I get it because of me or because, you know, because of them? And that's, nobody wants that, you know? They want to. Yeah,
like how many superheroes are freaking invested in first and then do that? You know what I mean? Even Iron Man, you know, Tony Stark still had to build up his stuff, even though he had some of his dad's stuff. You know, his money to work off, he still had to build it up even bigger. You know, you saw that in a whole different aspect of what the common norm would be, where the kid would just be blowing off stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, what types of superheroes or like comic books do you write about? Do you write about superheroes? Do you write about, you know, I have a buddy that just like, he does two really weird comic books. One, he posts on Reddit, a open comic book where people can add on their own pages. So it's like fucking Mad Libs. And you're like, wow, this is a really good story. You'll see someone actually like craft it out. Like there's a guy. And then like, he just starts going like pages. I mean, awesome. Like art, everything. And then some dude just throws in one, like, then he took a shit. And I'm like, what the hell?
Yay, the internet. Cause that's what you get.
That's the best part about Reddit though.
Yeah, I have two books right now that we're about to push on Kickstarter. One of them is a like fantasy type story, and the other one is, I guess technically you'd say it's a horror type story. It's a zombie story, but it's hopefully a new enough spin and a different spin on zombies that people enjoy it. And then the fantasy one, it is a, it is fantasy in very much like a Lord of the Rings style where it's a journey. You know, they're going on these two people, my two main characters are going on a journey all over their world. There's sorcery. I wouldn't say magic necessarily. It's more kind of sorcery and it's all religious based. And it's kind of a deconstruction of looking at the power of religion and what different religions do to different people. And if, you know, what happens when one is the main one and is more powerful than the others. And I'm working with an artist on the fantasy one. I'm working with an artist out of California who's done some indie work and is really good. His name's Paul Gorey. And then on the horror one, I'm working with a guy out of Mexico City who's never drawn a comic, but I kind of did an open call and he sent in some stuff and I really, really dug it. His name's Alex. Just awesome.
If you look at a lot of like the comic artwork, like for me, I really never took the time to read comics, but I actually found a different form of comic book art in actual books, like hardcover books inside of a library and around, you know, my intermediate school years. So the grades were, you know, I think it was 5, 6 and yeah, no, it was 4, 5 and 6. So around fifth grade to sixth grade, I was going to the library, had this enrichment class. They called it enrichment, but honestly, it was like for the kids that fucking, I don't know, let's shove them in a corner and get them out of class or something. I wasn't unintelligent. It was more on the fact I could not sit still because of ADHD. So it was hard for me to read a fucking Harry Potter book. Right. I was like, I've already seen the movie. Okay. I already know Daniel Radcliffe, you know. He's got the circular glasses and you're a wizard, Harry. Yeah, I got it. Okay. I don't need to read the book to tell me any of that. Now, the teacher would be like, hey, you need to read this. You need to read a book at least every week. You need to have a book. You need to have it read. You need to have whatever. I don't care how long it is. Just do it so we can get you marked off on your chart. I'm like, all right. So all the other kids were picking like, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which were good books, I thought. I still own them all today too, mostly from thrift stores. But it's like just that art doodle sketch was still good. You know, I found that I like pictures. Like I can read a good book if it's really interesting, like, you know, Sea of Monsters, like Percy Jackson type books, Stephen King books, you know, I can read biographies and stuff now that I'm older, but back in the day, it was never that. So my inspiration for looking up actual comic art and stuff came from these books I found in the library. And I was looking at these books and they were all like kind of mythology, all these different types of religion basis things that were kind of teaching you the legend through comic book art as well. And I remember one specifically, it was about the Mayans and this, like how they were created, like this dragon that was forming them and breathing them out of, like, you know, he would mold them out of clay and then he would breathe fire on them and craft them into people. And I was like, whoa. And it just had such amazing detail in the art. It was like, it's like Pokemon cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, all these things that kids play with, you know, these things that are coming back. The best parts about them weren't were obviously the monsters you get on them, but the fact that they had such artists that were crafting them in new and different ways. Like, you see the Pokemon cards that are coming out now. Look at the ones back in the day. You know what's in the bottom right corner? Is the artist's name. Some of them are like, dude, you might have a fucking Suicune or a Charizard or whatever badass Pokemon you want to name, but I got a fucking Squirtle. I got fucking a garbage bag. That's what he is. His name is Trubbage, yo. But his picture looks so much more badass because the artist is like, you gave me legit trash. You legit gave me a Pokemon that is a fucking trash bag. I'm going to draw this in the best way. And you're like, that card looks way better than that awesome card that's supposed to be worth like $1 million. To me, yeah. The other one's worth more because the artist took the time to use something and turn it into something of fucking amazing that no one would ever expect.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about comic arts. I mean, especially sequential art, you know, where they're telling stories and things. Now they use that in a lot of colleges, not only use books like Watchmen and stuff in their curriculum, but the actual textbooks. There are textbooks out there that are made in graphic novel form. I have a buddy who worked on one that was for a business finance class, but it was a comic book. It was still, you know, 500 pages long or whatever. But the way they told the story, because now we know that people learn differently. You know, not everybody can just look at a textbook and glean and like, oh, okay, I now know about finance. Some people need that different type of learning, that more visual style. And I think that's really cool because comics, I mean, they've proven that kids, and when I say kids, like I have a 4-year-old and he reads comics, then he can read. And because that the way the storytelling goes with comics is, the picture reflects the words, words reflect pictures and things. So for kids, they're able to grasp ideas and premises and words faster. Kids who are autistic or have some other kind of learning disabilities, they've proven that reading comics, again, helps them visualize and understand stories better. And we're really at an age, and especially now that they're still not socially acceptable per se, which I think is funny because, you know, Avengers Endgame is the highest grossing movie of all time.
You want to talk about superheroes coming back in a culture, every person that would label you as a nerd for wearing an Iron Man or Captain America t-shirt, everyone's fucking wearing it now.
Yeah. But see, the thing about it is comics themselves still have the stigma, and I don't understand it. Like I said, I do a lot of work with one of our local comic shops. Like when all these superhero movies come out, we go to the theater, we set up a little pop-up shop and we sell comics there. And I'm not a comic snob. You know, I know there's a lot of people who, especially around my age, they're like, well, when I grew up, you know, y'all made fun of me for reading comics. Now y'all don't even know that Iron Man's true history is this. I'm like, if you're enjoying it, whatever art form you're enjoying, I support you 100%. I know, but it still kind of baffles me how people are like, well, why would I want to read the comic? Like, well, there's only, well, let's see, we got like 25 hours of Iron Man on screen. But you know what? There are literally over 1,000, probably thousands of Iron Man stories in comics.
I can relate to that with one superhero who's my all-time favorite superhero. And I had to literally read the comic books because there's only one fucking movie after the guy. And even the actor that played the guy shits on that movie. You know who that is?
Which one?
It's a DC superhero.
Jonah Hex?
No. He plays a popular Marvel superhero now.
Went from DC to Marvel.
Yeah, back in the day. He uses a ring.
Oh, Hal Jordan, Green Lantern.
The fucking Green Lantern movie gets shit on so much. I love that movie on the basis of it's the only Green Lantern movie. But even the guy, Ryan Reynolds, who plays him, craps on it. I'm like, but I love the comics, and that was like one of my all-time favorite superhero movies. So when, like, not superhero movies, but superheroes. So when the movie came out, like, I was like, I remember from Justice League, you know? It was that. And which is why I agree with that movie. But if you look at, like, you know, you can, one of the best things, apps I have on my phone, besides like Snapchat, you know, where I can send like pictures of my shit to somebody, I don't know. But like the idea, like, I have a comic book app on my phone that I can just sit and look at comics, swipe, you know, be able to see different pages and all the alternate histories. Cause people are like, you don't know the true history of Iron Man. I'm like, which one? Because it seems like they all go and have their own history. You know, one thing, Iron Man dies at the end of this timeline. Then there's a whole other timeline where Iron Man's alive and he's killing the whole Marvel Universe. Like, what's happening? Like, it's all an artist's interpretation. There's so many histories. It's like alternate universes, and it makes your mind slip in. You know, a movie can limit itself. You know, if you want to use Halloween, for example. They can create Halloween 8, Halloween 9, but now, like, the new one, oh, it's not off the other ones. We're going to call those, like, the sequels. This is, like, the prequel. It's like, well, what's happening? Because I thought he was dead. I guess not. Like, but comic books have the best aspect of they don't have their own continuous story. It's not something that has to end. It's
yeah, even if somebody dies, they have ways around it. They, you know, they like when Oliver Queen, the original Green Arrow, when he died, he was dead for a while. And then Kevin Smith came on the book and he had him brought back to life. But the way he had him brought back, like, it was like, oh, okay. Instead of just saying, oh, he's back. It's like, no, here's why he came back. Here's how he came back.
Just and walks in the front door. I thought you were dead. Nah, man.
Yeah.
I missed that train, dude. I missed that train.
And that's something that comics can do and have to do because for better or worse, you know, nobody stays dead. I mean, everyone always said that Uncle Ben and Bucky are the people that always stay dead. Well, now Bucky got brought back in the early 2000s as Winter Soldier, and then he went on to be Captain America and then went back to being Winter Soldier, and he's one of the most popular characters out there.
Yo, so don't even say that right now, because if Uncle Ben comes back, starts making some rice again.
Right.
Oh my God. No, dude, that was probably the saddest moment of my childhood when Uncle Ben died. I was like, oh God. Now, see, I love the original Spider-Mans. I don't like the new one only on the concept of everyone says I look like Tom Holland, and I don't like that.
I don't like the second ones, the Amazing Spider-Mans.
You're talking about the Andrew Griffin guy.
Yeah.
Well, is that was a little bit more dark.
Was it? I mean, yeah, it wasn't as campy, I guess, as the Raimi trilogy, but Andrew Garfield is just...
Nah, dude, it was darker, man. It was dark. The girl died.
But that's...
She fucking cracked her head on the floor.
That's what happened. I mean, actually, in the comics...
But that's like the best part about DC too, is like DC has like these superheroes, but they're dark heroes. They were crafted by something like Elastoman, or, you know, whatever, Rubber Man, whatever he is, you know, that whole series is like, all of them had this crazy like thing that they experienced. You know, Marvel was like, you got powers. It's like, whoa, is it like a brighter side of like the DC part? You know, you see DC with that Joker movie, you know, that it showed, like, Marvel wouldn't show anything like that. It's like they're both really doing the same exact stuff, but just in different routes, you know, a softer one for the audience for like a Marvel, but like an older one for like teenagers with you know, like 20-year-olds, you know, a little bit of more of the adult crowd, but DC creating a little bit of like action and actual like shit happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you could argue Logan in there.
Yeah. Cause that's true. Cause I mean, that's one of my favorite, I think, out of the Marvel series for sure.
While Deadpool's not dark, I mean, it's, It's a hard R.
Yeah, but even
the violence in the language.
They talk about that now. Like, even Marvel's like, what the hell? Like, there's a big controversy now going on with Deadpool and Marvel, just because it's like he doesn't want to be. He's also known as not being a Marvel person either, even though he is Marvel comic. Like, even in the movies, he jokes around about Marvel and shit too. Like, he's supposed to be the vigilante, you know, like if you hire a bounty hunter who has the most money just to, you know.
Have you watched the Netflix series that they have, like Daredevil and Punisher and all those, Luke Cage?
I've seen a Daredevil one. I love that one.
I think all their Netflix stuff, like the Jessica Jones stuff, is real dark too. It deals with all sorts of like trauma and rape and alcoholism. And
that's what you see a lot of like TV shows, though. They do it that way because it gives them more to play on. You know what I mean? Like Gotham, that show.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of different stuff that does not follow the original idea of the Joker. You know, from the original like Jack Nicholson movie, which I love that they do that because it gives you a little bit more feedback. Like you're finding out like the Penguin, not this big bloated like guy that looks like a butler. You know what I mean? Like it like for me, going to Six Flags and riding the Penguin ride is the first thing I think of when the Penguin, where I decided to look him up. I'm like, whoa, it's fucking like a Danny DeVito character. And it's like, now you're seeing this like dude that played in like a really funny movie called Accepted. And he's like, he gets his leg beat by some mafia people. And next thing you know, he's fucking this thing that he is now. He's got the hairstyle. You get to see the character develop. I love that they threw that in there instead of just being like, here's this guy who's the Penguin. And it's like, whoa, how did he get to be that? It's like a backstory to a backstory.
Yeah. The thing about Gotham, I watched every episode. I really enjoyed the show. The problem, and I get on the soapbox a lot about it, is Warner Brothers, not necessarily DC, but their parent company, Warner Brothers, has no respect for their fans. And they haven't since the 90s.
Since fucking Looney Tunes.
Well, they think we're morons. And here's the thing. It all started with this thing called the Bat Embargo. So... yeah, I'm gonna preach for a second here.
Do it. Let's go. I want to hear about it.
So during the Bat Embargo back in the day, this is when you had the Justice League cartoon on, which was killing it. You know, awesome ratings, winning awards. All
Black Green Lantern, the original Green Lantern for me.
Then you also had like the Batman, Batman Brave and the Bold. There was always a different Batman cartoon. And Warner Brothers told the writers of Justice League, they're like, hey, you can use Joker once, but that's all. You can't use any other Batman villains. You can't use Robin, Nightwing, anybody like that. You have to keep them separate. Fast forward, Arrow. Arrow had the Suicide Squad in their show. They had a whole big thing planned for them. But since DC was making the Suicide Squad movie, even though it was different characters, they're like, hey, people, we don't think people are smart enough to differentiate it. So you have to kill off the Suicide Squad. And Arrow did. Fast forward to Gotham. If you go back and you think about it, they never call Jerome the Joker. Because, and even the actor, I forgot his name, he came out and he said that Warner Brothers straight up told him they cannot use the name The Joker because there was this Joker movie coming out and they wanted people to do...
Well, Jerome's not the...
Flashes is because in Flash, they established a multiverse.
Well, Jerome's not the Joker. Have you seen any of the new season of Gotham or the one before that?
Well, yeah, because last year was the final season. And, well his brother, Jeremiah. There's Jerome and Jeremiah. But either way, they never say the word Joker in the
entire series. That's true. That's true. Yeah, they always mention them by their name.
Yeah, because they weren't allowed. And it just goes on and on. I mean, you go back and look at the history of DC, and there's been times when somebody wanted to do something. Like, they wanted to use... in the Batman cartoon in the 90s, I forgot what villain it was, but they were told that they can't because at the time, it was in the original Justice League cartoon before it became JLU. They wanted to have Aquaman as a founding member like he was in the comics, but James Cameron was making an Aquaman movie that never came, he ended up not making it, but since he was going to make it, they said, okay, well, that's going to be the only Aquaman we use. You can't use him. And that's always been a real sour note for me. And because I'm like, you know, trust your fans. They're like, let them, we're smart enough to know, oh, hey, Ben Affleck's Batman, I realize, is not the Batman I see on Gotham, which is not the Batman I see on Titans, which is not the Batman I see on Young Justice. You know, I know that they're different ones, but they just have it in their head that people aren't smart enough. And it really bugs me, because I feel at that point you're limiting your creators. You're limiting your artists, your writers, and everybody who want to do something.
You're also not getting faith built up from the audience into that character. You know, I experienced this a little bit with, Captain America, Chris Evans. I see him as Captain America now that spoiler alert, after watching Endgame, like, he's not fucking Captain America anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's like, he's the Human Torch, okay? He's the Human Torch. That whole time he was prancing around in his Captain America outfit, I was like, just say fucking flame on. You know, you want to. Like, just say it. Because I was introduced to him, you know, as, you know,
Johnny Storm.
Johnny Storm. It was like that was him. And then they did the remake, and I was like, oh, it's a whole different person. I was like, man, like, I still know that original movie, and I'm just like, that's how I know Chris Evans. And now it took forever, all those Avengers and Captain America movies, for me to even look past like that, now that he's actually Captain America.
But to show you the difference between DC and Marvel, they're in the Lego Marvel video game, which is a phenomenal game. It's a lot of fun. Everyone thinks it's a kid's game.
I was a big fan of Lego Star Wars. You're talking, I mean, I just downloaded this morning, I downloaded the Pirates of the Caribbean Lego. So you're talking to a fellow Lego game fanatic.
In the first Lego Marvel game, there's an achievement you can get on Xbox where if you say, because you play as two characters at any given time. And in the free roam, if you set your characters as the Human Torch and Captain America, you get an achievement. It's called, like, Don't I Know You? Or You Look Familiar. I think that's what it was. It's been a long time. And that's them acknowledging, like, because that was before the new Fantastic Four came out. So Chris Evans was still the Fantastic Four, you know, in everybody's mind. So they're like, but he'd already moved on to be Captain America. So they're like, ha, here's a little in-joke for you. We know they're both Chris Evans.
Don't you love it when comics and movies do that?
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact in Deadpool they make fun of, like, Wolverine, the Green Lantern, all these types of, like, things. I love it when they kind of break the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah, I just feel like when they do that commentary on themselves. And again, that's what I like about Marvel, is they don't take themselves too seriously. Yeah, they'll do the, like, the dark Netflix shows, but in the big grand scheme of things, they'll find a way to admit, like, oh yeah, that didn't work, our bad. You know, when they make fun of the original Deadpool from the X-Men Origins Wolverine, you know, they're like, yeah, that was probably the dumbest thing we ever did. We're sorry. Now we're going to make fun of it for all these other movies.
Honestly, that was one of my favorite movies, was Wolverine Origins. It
wasn't for the Deadpool character.
I think it was, but it was like they had to create something. But, dude, I want to fucking know more about, like, Logan's brother, man. Like, that dude, like, the beginning scenes of that movie were amazing. Only on the concept of they barely age, and they're running through, like, you know, the beaches of Normandy, like, hopping off. And, like, you see him go through, fight all these different wars, like the Civil War, using muskets and dropping the muskets. And they're using, like, AKs, like, fast forward 100 years. It's like, that shit was dope.
Yeah, even back in the X-Men cartoon from the 90s, they did a cool flashback episode where it's in World War II and Wolverine is with Captain America.
Yeah, like, that stuff, like, I love it when they do things of that. Like, I think what really makes a good superhero movie is when it makes it kind of relatable.
Yeah. Like, well, and that's always been the thing about DC versus Marvel is, you know, DC is about 30 years older in the comics. They debuted in the 30s, whereas Marvel... that we know, Marvel, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men started in the 60s. And that was always kind of the thing, is DC, even to this day, DC, they're more considered gods. You know, you have, with the exception of Batman, when you look at Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, you know, they are very literal gods.
Yeah, it makes
and
it
then you go kind to of Marvel, and it's like, oh, hey, here's this nerdy kid who got bit by a spider.
See, I say Batman's a little bit unrelatable, only because I think the only people that can relate is like if your parents got shot outside of a theater and you invested a lot of money.
Yeah, like, I had billions of dollars.
Can't relate to that.
Yeah.
It makes it difficult, but like with a Marvel thing, like people that are developing their powers, they still, even if it's like they're born with them or they're just something, it's all in the concept of being misunderstood. You know, like the Hulk, that he gets so angry he can't control himself from turning into a monster. You know, like Stan Lee has a great description of every single idea for the character and the meaning behind it. It's a little bit inspiring, you know, because I think what makes Marvel movies so popular is not only this, the vast amount of like, it seems like they go a lot of the times all out to create like an overall enjoyable experience, but like, you know, it's crazy. There's the amount of effort and kind of story they can use to create a Marvel movie that actually makes you go back and look at the comic books.
Oh yeah. And I mean, that shared universe experience, you know, where like at the end of Iron Man 3, when it turns out he's been talking to Bruce Banner the whole time, you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. Or like in Thor Ragnarok, when Doctor Strange shows up, you know, anytime you get that little, when they acknowledge that, yeah, you're watching this movie, but this movie is part of something bigger.
Yeah.
It's always really cool.
Going into a whole other universe type thing, you know, going from Asgard to Earth, and then like you get to meet like another superhero that's came out in another movie. And, I really like that because, like, I mean, how badass was it when Thor landed on that bridge and you're just hearing the fucking Zeppelin song? Like, ah, like that whole fucking like old school type rock music while he's running across the bridge, just killing people and shit. Like, that was cool. That got a lot of people pumped up in theaters for that.
Yeah. And then you get the Hulk show up and you're like, oh, okay, that's
like, weird, but I like it.
From work.
I like it. Like, oh shit. Like, that's his work friend. Like, okay, I like it. I like what you're doing there. It's not something like where we're just going to throw a bunch of money at this movie and just add every single favorite and hopefully it gets top of the charts. No, it was like, we're going to kind of create a background to this. Like, remember, nobody knew what happened after he crashed his jet. Oh, there you go. He's been living on another planet or something. It's like, yeah. Whoa.
But it's like, you know, you have to wait.
Yeah, but it's like putting people on a cliff.
3 years before that payoff. And
it's like putting people on a cliffhanger, though. It's like they try and do that, but then next thing you know, like something goes through, and then next thing you know, that movie never gets made. It's like, but then what the fuck happened?
Yeah. And that's what I really hated. So DC has came out and said that they're going to focus more on individual movies and not the shared universe. I'm like, well, but...
Because they're getting
shared universes.
Yeah, they're getting so much good publicity, and they think it's just like I talked to a couple film critics, you know, through this podcast, and kind of understand a little bit more. And they were like, it's a template. It's like Call of Duty, okay? They can just add a couple things to it, but they have a template that works, so they're just going to keep pumping them out because they know that's what it works. Mm-hmm. You know, DC is starting to kind of realize, like, the template, having a story basis on one character gives them a hell of a lot more options to create more movies than just using a bunch of them in one movie.
Well, and the fact that we really, by the time we got Justice League, you know, yeah, we had two Superman movies. And one of them, you got a little bit of Batman and a little bit of Wonder Woman. But I think if they would have done like Marvel, you know, introduce the characters individually first, had to have a standalone Batman movie, have a standalone. Oh, we did get a Wonder Woman movie. I take that back. We did. But have your Aquaman movie come out, your Shazam movie, Cyborg, Flash, and then put them all together. It makes more sense because otherwise... Not only are you having to tell the story of why this team came together, you have to tell the story of who these people are. And you only have, you know, two and a half hours. You run out of time real quick, and then you got to throw a villain in there, and then give the villain, you know, why is this villain the way he is? That's what worked about Avengers, is really you didn't have to introduce anybody. Even Loki, the villain, had already been introduced.
Yeah, he's a mythical folklore. I learned him before I even knew that he was in a Marvel comic. I was like, hold on, that's Loki. That's the god of mischief. I saw the mask. I know Jim Carrey's enemy. Okay.
That's one of the first comic book movies right there.
And it was like, it's crazy because, I mean, the only one that really stands out in my mind when it comes to DC movies to like, besides like obviously the newest ones, but The Dark Knight, dude. That movie, the first 5 minutes is a bank robbing scene. You know, that was like, it felt like it was carried more on the basis of its actor, you know, not Christian. I mean, Christian Bale is an amazing he is Batman, but I'm talking about like Heath Ledger playing the Joker in that movie was fucking crazy. Like that was something I saw that when I was 14 years old. I was like, whoa, like I'm in the theater with my dad and my dad's like, this is the best fucking movie. I'm like, it's because the first 5 minutes was a damn bank robbing scene.
Yeah, it sets it up pretty quickly and efficiently. But what's cool, what I think is neat about the Joker is in the comics, he doesn't have an origin story. And they just revealed not too long ago that there's actually three different Jokers running around. So, you know, that's what's fun. And that's when you can have, okay, you have your Heath Ledger Joker that people love. You have your Jack Nicholson, your Jared Leto, even your Joaquin Phoenix now, you know, and they're all different. And that's totally cool because in the comics, they're all different also. So you can have, if you like the more thuggish gangster of Jared Leto, okay, fine. If you like the chaotic Heath Ledger, okay, fine. You know, or the gangster Jack Nicholson, you can have so many different iterations of the character. And I think that goes back to, you know, Warner Brothers thinks that we're not smart enough to know that there's can be different characters. And it's like, no, we thrive on that. You know, that's how you get people who love this Joker or that Joker, but they know that it's different Jokers. And that's something that you can do with comic characters is they are pretty fluid. Especially like I said, like the Joker who doesn't have a definitive origin story. So you can tell whatever origin story you want or make him whoever you want. And so that's going to make him more relatable to more people. And so that's cool.
I got to ask this question. So with you talk about the fantasy one that kind of plays a little bit more on, and that's the one that plays a little bit more on the religion one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Why would you choose to make fun of a very, very, I guess, hot topic, not like hot as in popular, but like boiling water type of Scoville scale. You're going to burn your mouth if you start even talking about religion to somebody.
Well, because the way I approach it, I don't approach it in a comedic manner. It is a very, like you said, it deconstructs and examines, okay, well, why do we do this? And it's not any, since it is in a fantasy world, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that this is Judeo-Christian religion. This one's not Muslim religion. This one's not Buddhist religion, you know. No, these are all their own completely different and separate things that don't have a real world basis. And so with that, I'm able to look at it differently and be like, okay, well, why do people do these things? Why do people want this power and do this instead of going with this one?
I like that because I'm actually, I research very heavily into parody religions. I don't know if you know too much about them.
Not off the top of my head.
So basically what you're explaining is a parody religion. So there's a thing called Pastafarianism. You ever heard of that one? It's probably the most popular.
I know Rastafarianism, but not Pastafarianism.
Well, Pastafarianism makes fun of Rastafarianism, but it's the idea of you worship a giant spaghetti monster, a flying spaghetti monster, who changes scientific evidence with its noodly appendages is literally the description. Now I say that to you and you start laughing. Okay. You can laugh. Okay. But this is a recognized religion. There's been people that I actually got almost arrested at my Maryland, the driver and whatever the vehicle administration where you're supposed to get your license and everything. So I turned 21. And what the religion does as a parody religion, it was made by a guy from Harvard in like 2006 who was basically created this to make fun of the idea that you can teach a certain religion in a school or in the education system. He didn't like that. He thought that education system shouldn't have a bias towards Christianity or anything. So he decided to create Pastafarianism to highlight the dumb aspect of the fact that we're worshiping a certain basis when we know that Christianity is not the dominant religion anymore. Mm-hmm. There's other ones, Muslim, Jewish, you know, whatever. And so he created this religion. So it actually has a really, really kind of meaningful story behind it. But the whole thing was just jokes. Like instead of saying amen at the end of dinner, you say ramen. Instead of like, you know, you do stuff like that. Their heaven's a beer volcano and all these things. And it's filled with strippers and, you know, their hell's basically the same thing, but it's the opposite. All the strippers have like STDs and stuff. And it was like a fun way and a ploy of kind of having a deep meaning to something. There's right. like the trans universal church of the blissful ringing, the zombie blissful ringing up in Russia. 750,000 people recognize religion. There's the church of euthanasia that we have now. It's a bunch of people getting a message out there that's either outlandish, but it's supposed to highlight something that we follow a little bit too strictly on. You know, how many times are you told not to bring up politics or religion at a table when you're eating dinner or something? Because it's always a sketchy subject because people stand so firm with things. And I just say, like, I'm an ordained minister under the United Church of Bacon. Yes, I said the United Church of Bacon. It is a recognized religion that is a safeguard for atheists. Basically, instead of someone asking you what your religion is, instead of saying you're atheist, you say, I'm under the Church of Bacon. It's just a safeguard. It's a title. And I went to my Maryland courthouse and I became an ordained minister. I went there. I paid $45 and spent an hour and a half of my time trying to convince this woman in front of me that it's a recognized thing. I have my certificate on my wall. It's hanging above my freaking college diploma. And I'm like, it's just the idea that like we follow and live religiously into things. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying any of that. I am open-minded as a person. I can see where religion, Christianity, all these things has helped so many people. But also, it's just something we created. Everything. I try and highlight that and everything. Like if someone lives their life by it, so be it. But don't right. try and force it on anybody else. I got into an argument with two Jehovah's Witnesses, not on the concept I was trying to prove them wrong. It was the concept of like, why are you condemning people to hell for not believing in something that they don't believe in? They don't believe in that doesn't mean that there's not. How do you know? Do you have the evidence? I just believe. Well, it's like, okay.
So do they.
It's like, but they believe in something different. Just open up your mind. More people need to be open-minded. I'm open-minded to both religion and something. You know, that'd be awesome if I was wrong and there's a God out there. I have no clue if he's Morgan Freeman or if he's a dude who's like 30 years old wearing Crocs on top of Mars, jacking off and playing Nintendo Wii. I have no clue. So it's like, why would we close-mind ourselves to a certain view when we could be so open-minded to believe that it could be anything?
Right. Yeah. I have a bunch of friends who are pastors and stuff. And one of them, we had a good talk one day because I was explaining to him about theology versus mythology. And we were talking about like Greek, you know, the Greek gods and stuff. And
dude, he's like, I'm a Greek mythology buff. So let's go. If you got to talk about some Greek mythology, let's do it.
Well, so that's what I was talking to him about. He's like, oh, yeah, the Greek mythology. I was like, man, those were their beliefs. I was like, that was their theology. They didn't view it as mythology. I was like, the same way, and I mean, he's a Christian pastor. I was like, the same way some people view your religion as mythology. I was like, would you want them to call it mythology or your theology? He's like, man, I never thought about it like that. And so now ever since then, he refers to all religions as like their theology instead of, you know, being like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's Tibetan mythology. No, that's Tibetan theology, you know, and that's because that's how I am. I agree with you. You know, I'm like, you believe what you believe. As long as you're not a dick about it, I'll support you.
Yeah, don't force it down someone's throat. Like the best part about it calling it an ideology is because it's a fucking idea.
Yeah.
It's just a thought. It's like, what happens if this, you know, it helps people get places and it helps them not. It's some people need it. Like I know a woman that like her husband's paralyzed and she turned to religion and became very, very religious after that experience. And I also know people that have never, ever once even thought of, about it because they just think it's impossible or something to be out there. I'm like, just find common ground. You're not going to be able to change every single person. So why are you going to waste all your time trying to?
Yeah. And I mean, that's how my thing, you know, like you said, as long as you're not hateful about it, I'm down, you know, whatever you want to do. And I mean, I'm the same way with everything. You know, if you're a vegan, cool. As long as you're not, hey, you know, telling me that I'm wrong because I like to eat steak. You know, I'm not going to get onto you. You don't get onto me, and everything's good. But
let's just shoot pool. That's all we have to do is just shoot pool.
Right.
Those people are technically, they can go nerdy on that one too, man. Shooting pool, that's fun and relaxing. I'm telling you, it's something weird like the environment you get if you're shooting pool at a bar.
But then you get like the hustlers in there and they take it super, super seriously.
That's what I think. It's like everyone has that inside of them. They have something they get super, super serious about, like you going off on like superheroes and comic books and stuff. And me barely knowing probably a piece of what you know as much, like, you know, hell of a lot more than I do. I love seeing that because it strikes up like interest and it strikes up like, first of all, information, knowledge for me, you know, and a conversation hopefully for you. It's just like you're teaching somebody. I mean, I love seeing when someone goes off about their passion. I mean, I want to say it again, like the night nerd, dude, like you're out there speaking to people, whether it's on things you want to talk about or things that you've heard people want to talk about, like getting, I know you get the audience's input too. Like, hey, ask some questions and I'll like give you some answers. Like, that's awesome. I definitely think that like, this is something that needs to be out there more, because how many times do you see people just kind of close off things and be like, no, we don't care about your feedback. We're just going to do it this way. It's like, yeah, but sometimes it's nice to like, you know, show people that there's like this inner nerd inside of us all. And to classify that nerd doesn't mean, you know, you're super smart or, you know, all these things. It's just what would be considered nerdy. Right. You know what I mean? A geek doesn't mean you have to wear black rim glasses and all these things. That would be labeled kind of like a nerd type, but geek is all about being passionate about something that you're really interested in. It's about geeking out on something. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. And I mean, I agree on all that. You know, I think the thing is you run into the problem of people crossing that line of passion to being like a zealot. And that's with anything. I mean, not even getting back into religion, but like, there are comic book zealots, there are football zealots, there are music zealots, where, oh, if you don't like Pearl Jam, you're dumb and you don't have any taste in music, or oh, you don't love Kevin Smith movies, well, you don't know anything about movies. And I when you get to that point of being a zealot, I think that's where it's like, all right, now you just need to stop.
You got to quote Peter Griffin on that one. Who the hell cares?
Right.
It's like, what, someone, let someone go off about something they're super interested in. Honestly, though, how many times do you run into someone that's like, this is my favorite band? You're like, name one song. Then they name the top hit. And you're like, now name another one. They're like, it's like, bro, you got a tattoo on your arm and you don't even know the band.
Or even the opposite, where people are like, oh, that band's shitty. Why? Why is it shitty?
Nickelback gives a lot of shit, but everyone still knows the song Rockstar.
Yeah, I used to tour with bands, and one of the bands we toured with was Nickelback. And to this day, I stand by that they are some of the nicest guys ever.
Because they're from Canada. They're all nice down there.
Well, and if their music is so bad...
It's not bad, though. It's just the fact that like
they're hated so much.
It got stereotypicalized as being bad music with all they do is complain about something. It's like, okay. And then it just became like a joke that actually turned serious. You know what I mean? Yeah, like a bunch of people now hate it with a passion.
Yeah. But my thing is, if people hate them so much, how are they one of the top selling artists of all time? You know?
Exactly, because they looked at this photograph.
So it just, I don't know. It just amazes me what people do to try and put down others creatively. And I don't understand it.
Well, they're all trying to cope, man. I think that's what a lot of people are doing nowadays, is trying to cope. Just trying to get through the day. It seems like everybody's got problems and nobody wants to address them.
I can get behind that.
Same. Well, dude, I really appreciate you doing the podcast, Lance, especially to me just sliding in your DMs. You're like, what's going on here? This guy's just popping in, asking some questions. Okay. I'm hopefully going to give him some answers. And you have, man.
Awesome, man. It's been a lot of fun. It's like I said, I mean, I always like an opportunity to, like we just said, talk to somebody that I don't know and maybe learn a thing or two and be better for it.
Exactly. Now, I want to give you here a minute at the end to be able to promote your content so people can find you.
Okay, yeah. So we're on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look for The Night Nerd. That's THENIGHTNERD. Like daily shows, Facebook, we post a bunch of stupid nerdy memes that are a lot of fun, and news content, you know, if there's any Hollywood casting, we cover all that stuff. Email me nightnerd@thenightnerd.com. Check out, I guess I can announce it here, this first announcement of where you can find the thing. I haven't even shared this on my personal Facebook, but facebook.com/Santa's Kitchen Book. That's my kid's book. It comes out November 1st, November 4th, I think is the day, or the 5th. Can't remember if it's Monday or Tuesday it's coming out, but it's coming out there. Check that out. And then if you follow The Night Nerd, you'll also get to know about our new comics that are coming out when they launch. We'll be launching one Kickstarter next month and the other one probably in December. So lots of cool stuff coming. Just look for The Night Nerd. We're fun. We love to hear from you. I love talking to everybody. We have a bunch of great shows on the network. And yeah, hope to see some of you out there.
Yep. Because I'm pretty sure everyone at some point sleeps with a night nerd.
Oh, yeah.
I meant to say nightlight.
I mean, whatever works.